Happy 36 day of Sfiras Hayomer. And we just did the Mishnah and Daf Zayin Amud Beis about the difference between pishtan and other wood byproducts in terms of making ptilot. And while we were at it, the Mishnah also introduced yet another issue. That's Nogea, the dinim of Tumah V'Tayra, which for some reason have become very important in our parak. We've gotten into the dinim of Negoyim and Sheretz and what's the halacha of other types of materials. And here's another thing that's unique about Pishtan. The only type of thing that's a wood product that will be Matame Tumas Olim is Pishtan. We mentioned yesterday, and I want to re-mention today, that of course we know that Kalim are Mitamim when they are themselves Mahil over a mace. I mean, so this seems to make no sense at all. I mean, anything will become Tame as long as it's a Kli. As a Beged, it's a Kli. Therefore, Tosis understands that what we're talking about over here is where whatever it was, even if it was a Beged, but it's now Mechuber to the Karka, it's become a tent, it's now connected. Once it's that, it's no longer a Kli. So now it has a different shame. There's a shame of an ohel. What type of ohel is not only mevi tum'ah, since it serves simply as a passive environment that defines the space within it. Anything in it becomes tameh. Certainly a kli in it or a person in it becomes tameh if there's a mace under it. But what type of ohel will itself become tameh, even though it's a building, so to speak? It's a mechuber l'karka, and therefore normally wouldn't be shayach l'tumah. And yet we know the Torah does say in the Pasuk, V'hizo al ha'ohel. So you actually have to sprinkle the ohel itself when there's a mace there. What type of ohel is it referring to, says the Mishnah, only an ohel of Pishtan. By the way, not all of the Rishonim agree with the specific way that Tosfos defines this. The Rambam has it somewhat different, that it's not a function of chibur necessarily, but of a shame beged versus a shame ohel. But that's already beyond the needs of our requirements here. So hayotzi min ha'etzinim etamitum asomim ela pishtan. Now this seems very, very arbitrary, because I mean, bishleima, where we were dealing with the nature of material in the Torah, and the only place that we dealt with it up until now was benogea, elements that were called begotim. And there we have a good source. We have the parshas negayim. And in the Parshas of the Goyim, we have a definition of Begadim, and we saw that now is sort of spreads to tzitzit and issues of kilayim and so on. But there's certainly a very, very nice moker in the Torah for how to define the nature of materials when it comes to bigud. When it comes to ohel, of course, there's only one thing that comes to mind. There's only one place where the Torah defines an ohel that is made from something, and that's the Olamoid. And indeed, says the Gemara, that is the mocker of this Mishnah. I mean, hold on, where do we get the idea that when the Torah uses the word ohel, it can be referring only, in the overall sense, to the Yizah al ha'ohel. It can be referring only to an ohel that's made out of Pishtan. Says Rabbi Elazar, Gamar ohel ohel mi Mishkan. In the same way that the Mishkan contains within it, it's called an ohel, contains within it these materials. Why would I say that? Because this is Zotorata Adam ki amut ba ohel, and it says in terms of Mishkan, Vayifros, it's a ohel ala Mishkan. Mala alan shel pishtan karui ohel. So just as overall in the Ol Moed, we refer the only type of tree-derived fiber that we have is pishtan. We saw yesterday we call pishtan tree-derived, and you know, it's not, technically speaking, in terms of other halachas, a tree. Afkan shel pishtan karui ohel. Here, too, pishtan is the fundamental ohel, and that's the only thing that the Torah is marv. And of course, you'll think to yourself, if that's the case, then how do we know if anything's under a plastic ohel that it would become tummy? Forget about the plastic becoming tummy. The roof becoming tummy. If this is the definition of ohel, then it's the definition of ohel for all dinim of ohel. So then even if there's another kli under the ohel, it shouldn't become tummy. We're taking for granted that there's two levels. The question of the ohel per se, which we see must be tummy in some cases, it says v'yizah al ohel, And then there's a question of what's under the heart. The truth is that the Sifra asks this, because it's the immediate question that anyone would ask. Once I define all, then I have to define it totally. And ends up making a limud, which is based on a Kal Vachomer, from the din of Knisa into an equivalent of Bayit Ohel by Mitzora. To teach me that it would, when it comes to entry into a space, you don't need the same definitions that you need of an Ohel in terms of a Giza al Ha'ah. So the Gemara is simply taking all of that for granted, because it's really not our sugya. But in terms of the Ohel itself, it brings us just the opening of the Sifra. What is it that we're referring to? We must be referring to an Ohel that's made out of Pishtan. I see that you listened to the weather this morning and discovered that it was pouring in Haifa and decided it must be cold. The only explanation.
Is it pouring?
Yeah.
I don't know what they're pouring.
It is actually.
It's raining.
It's raining. Well, it might be petrochemicals. I don't know. But they say it's pouring. I mean, they say, you know, a different Titan. I mean, when it rains, it pours petrochemicals.
Not a
Titan. No, you never know. Yera chaitanim. Yera chaitanim. So.
In the Mishkan, didn't they have also...
We're going to talk about it. But the only eighth product was Pishtan. We're going to talk about the other issues that were there. Now, if you're really serious about learning it out of the Mishkan, I mean, wait, then you got to go all the way, no? I mean, over there by the Mishkan, it wasn't just Pishtan. When we were talking about Pishtan yesterday, remember, I mean, when we were trying to learn out Reb Shimon ben Elazar's din, even unfinished threads of Pishtan, non-tovrishal pishtan, onimshal pishtan, which seems to run counter, and that's the whole, we didn't go into that sugya yesterday, it was right at the end of the day, but that's the whole sugya of how would we derive something that isn't even shesivarev, and so on. And here, in the OL, the pishtan is defined as not only complete, and not only tavui, but these are threads that need to be shazur, they're twisted threads, and they're twisted six times over, as we learn out from the use of sheish, the pishtim, that we've got to make them with six different threads twisted together to make one thick thread and then to form the covering. So maybe that's the only type of special oil. But that's the only thing you see in the Torah. So why don't you say Malal and Shazurin, you need threads that have been twisted, V'chutan kafur shisha, and each one is made out of six separate threads that have been spun. So Afkan Shizurin Vikutan Kafu Shisha. Why not say the same thing is true about every oil? Talmud Lomar, therefore you look in the Pasuk, you'll notice there's a rather strange repetition of the word oil, as if the Torah is attempting to avoid the pronoun all the time. Always repeats. Instead of Elav, it's a oil. So I mean just in the opening Pasuk, Adam Kiyamud Bo, Kol Habo El Oel, Kol Asher Bo Oel. Why do you keep repeating Bo'el? To tell me that we shouldn't take all of the requirements, we expand it gradually. One oil tells me you don't need the chutan kafushesh. One tells me you don't even need shazur. So we're left with a comparison to the ohel moed, which is a true gzereshava, by the way. And therefore, we have only pishtim that would be mitame in as an ohel. But why don't we go all the way and say, OLO, Reba, everything, a few kol mele. There's an awful lot of OLs there. No, kings, there are shava, my hamile. I mean, what the Torah is clearly trying to give us some fundamental din through the gzera shava. That fundamental din would be the identification of the material. Then everything else is, of course, more or less coincidental. The material is definitive. The question of how particularly I form it once I know what the material is, that makes more sense to say is not essential, and the extra limudim come to address it, the olo, the ribuyim. Now, asks the Gemara, if that's the case, I mean, why don't we include the krashim? The krashim are made out of pure wood. I mean, they're also called the ol moed, right? So, Rashi learns that this means, why not say that a wooden roof would be makabel tuma in an oil? Because we're calling wood ohel. Tosis doesn't like that because the sides were the oil. We always call the covering the oil. So why would we think that we could, just because we call something an oil that has sides, that we could twist it around and make the sides the top. I mean, that seems to be stretching it a bit. Therefore, Tosfos learns that the question of the Gemara was, if you're telling me that only a Mishkan, as it was defined in the Mikdash, in the Midbar, is an Ohel, then maybe only Pishtim that is spread over Kreshim is called an Ohel. But not just Pishtim that's hanging or that's put up as a tent and is attached to the ground with Yateidot. I mean, maybe that's not an Ohel.
Like a
tipi. Yeah. I mean, in any event, the Kreshim are certainly important, aren't they? Says the Torah. What did you say?
Are the Kreshim with Kabbalah Tumah going up to hold enough the material, like even a tipi you have wood?
No, they're not Kabbalah Tumah. So, answers the Gemara, it's a mistake to think that the Kreshim are the Mishkan. So look carefully at the pasuk. Omar Kro, V'yasita Kreshim la Mishkan. Make Kreshim for the Mishkan, which means that the Mishkan is the Mishkan, but the Kreshim are not the Mishkan. So Mishkan Kurui Mishkan, V'ein Kreshim Kurui Mishkan, and therefore their presence is incidental to the definition of Mishkan vis-a-vis the Dinim of Tumah. No, we can effectively ignore them.
Oil is synonymous with Mishkan.
We're going to see. That's our next problem.
Ella
Meata, if you're going to...
You can need some sort of a kerosene. You need a central kerosene. It's not constantly there.
This from a man who has been chased by aliens for years, using all types of anti-gravity devices, and you insist on having a simple, old-fashioned, mechanical, nonsensical kerosene in the middle of your teepee? I am shocked. Broken hearted.
Is this for the Rabbi who gets the
what happened to Back to the Future?
Is this for the Rabbi who gets the importance of calling the name the Shem, calling the Shem Mishkan?
Calling what?
That he did a different approach than Tosfos and has the Shem of Mishkan. That's what I said earlier. Is this line in the Gemara?
We're getting close to it. That was Ramati's question. Now that the Gemara is going to ask that now is the next question. If you're telling me that we should be medayek, that when you're saying X is for Y, then it means by definition that X is not part of Y. So then if that's the case, you could go all the way. You could say, V'yasita michseh lo ohel, in which case, V'hachinami michseh lo ikre ohel. You're going to tell me now that, well, let's isolate the different parts. So you say, the Torah said, make a covering for the ohel. The covering for the ohel was made out of skins. Orot elim odamim and orot chashim. Those were a michseh, right? A cover.
Where was the pishtan at that point?
So what we really have is we have three levels. We have mishkan, then we have ohel, which is the izim, that's made out of izim, right? And then we have the michseh for the ohel on the mishkan,
which is made out of
Orot elim odamim and orot chashim. That's skin. That's
where was
not
the thing made out of pishtan and all that?
The pishtan is on the bottom.
First level.
And this is on the top. Right? We start off with the yiriot izim, and then we go on to the, with the orot to the sheish and so on. Then the yiriot izim, and then the orot chashim.
You haven't said pishtan there, I'm sorry.
Because it says sheish. Sheish
is the pishtan there.
Yes. And it's very important that it be sheish, because that's how we get the idea that there's also sheish, literally. No, that it's literally sheish, six. As a double meaning, that's where we get the six threads. So wherever pishtan is referred to as sheish instead of pishtan, we use it in this sense. So you could say the same thing, that a michseh is definitely not an ohel, by definition. I mean, that's what you seem to be saying now. But if that's true, then why in the world would Rabbi Elazar have asked, or behemat meyam maushi etameh ba'ohel hamet, if an ohel is made out of skins, and if those skins are of non-kosher animal, would those skins be tameh? Is an absurd question to raise, because even orot of a kosher animal, according to your logic, are not tamei. Since the Torah is going out of its way to separate the orot, which are the michseh, from the ohel, because it says lamed, make a michseh for the ohel, which by your standards means that that's telling me the michseh is not an ohel, or should not be treated as an ohel, which means that the Torah specifically told you that orot even Torot are not metame when it comes to Ohel HaMeit. They will bring Tumen and Ohel HaMeit, but they themselves will not be tame. So why would Rebbe Elazar even raise the question of Orot of a Behemah Tameah?
I'm not sure what's the situation of the question of the Behemah Tameah.
We're going to get to that in great length. But right now we're just interested in why anyone would raise such a question. The Torah went out of its way to prohibit, to exclude it from the din of Tumas HaMeis. So Orbe Mat Miami boy answers the Gemara, I still stick with my original logic that if you say X is 4Y, then X can't be Y. The only reason that over here Orot are actually Metame is because the Torah goes out of its way to put them back together again as a single unit. That Shine Hatam to Hadar Hadre Kra. The Torah puts together all of the coverings of the Mishkan and calls them one thing by saying, V'nasu et yiriyot ha-mishkan v'yat ohel mo'ed mi'chseihu u'mi'chseyatach ha-shashir alav. Why does it put them all together like that? Makish elyon le'tachton ma'tachton karui ohel ach elyon karui ohel. It's putting them all together and telling me that the 11 Yiriot, which were Izim, are specifically referred to as Ohel. So that means that the Mitzeu is now set in total. We refer to this construct of Mishkan as an Ohel, which of course ultimately is how we know that the Mishkan is called the Ohel, because otherwise who says that a Mishkan is an Ohel?
Why does it add on to the level? It says...
Well, there might even be another level over there, as we'll see in the next line. Gufa.
But the 11 Yiriot, was that on the Mishkan itself?
Start crushing on the sides. We then put 10 Yiriot of Sheish, Mashzor, and so on. Then we put 11 Yiriot to give us a little extra room to hang down, the back and the front. We get 11 Yiriot of Izim, followed by Orot Elim Odamim, and according to some, as we'll see in a moment, followed by yet another cover of Orot Hashim, or according to some, the Orot Elim and the Orot Hashim are actually one made out of two parts, one long covering.
It sounds more like insulation.
That leather gets awful heavy.
The Mishkan was darn heavy. Absolutely. That's why we needed Mack trucks for them. Those wagons become central to Hilchos Shabbos, as we're going to see. Very, very fundamental. Exactly how large they were and how it was one moved on them and so on. Gufa, boy, Rabbelez. Orvei Matmeya. Again, now that you've raised the question, what is the din of the skin of a behemah tameah if it's turned into a tent? Maushi tamei tumat olam. Maika mi boyle. I mean, what exactly was he asking? Is it the only makor that we have the Mishkan? I mean, we can't just make it out of whole skin, can we? So if the Mishkan, if we know the Mishkan is made out of kosher skins, arot elim odamim, where would the source be for us to expand that into other type of orot?
I'm sorry, just to clarify, at this point, our only definition of Ohel, wherever the Torah will use it, will be whatever the Mishkan is. That's the operating premise here.
No. The only definition of Ohel when the Torah uses it in the Hiza al HaOhel. Were you late today? We have another lima from Tzaraz, from Mitzera, that defines an Ohel in terms of coming into an Ohel, as opposed to being the Ohel itself. That's a different issue. So what was he asking? Omer Ivana Barava, actually, what he was asking was, what the heck is a Tachash? I mean, it says Orot Tachashim. Do we know whether a Tachash is kosher or not? If a Tachash isn't kosher, and there you go. That would mean that Orot, non-kosher Orot, would become Tomei in an Ohel. So this question is very clear-cut. Indeed, the model of Tumat Ohalim is the Mishkan, And the materials in the Mishkan are known. We don't know what kind of animal a Takash is, even though we know it was a Takash skin. And that was his question. Tamehaya or Tahoraya? What is a Takash? Omer Rav Yosef, I understand. What kind of question is that? Mighty Boile, what was he asking? Tanina, doesn't it say Beferush in the Braita? Lohu Sharu Lamalekit Shamayim Elaor Behimata or Abilvat. The only type of skins that are acceptable for doing things that are Malekit Shamayim, Chefze Kodesh, is Dafka skin of a Behemat Ora, in which case the Takash must have been a Behemat Ora, and that it answers his question. There's no basis for expanding the Din of Ol to Or Behemat Tmeya. Mosif Rabbi Abba asks on this from the following. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, first of all, let's talk about the construction of the Mishkan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there were two separate coverings, as we saw before, the Mashmaut Michseu, Michsei HaTachat, Mashmaut, two separate coverings. Achat shel orot elim odamim, ve'achat shel orot techashim. Whereas Rabbi Nechemiah said, no, actually, the orot elim odamim and orot techashim are mixed together in one covering, and it was Michsei Chalaya, Vidome Kemin Tala Ilan, and it was similar to a Tala Ilan. Now a Tala Ilan is a type of animal that probably hangs from trees. But anyway, it's very colorful and it's very not kosher. Maybe some kind of lemur or something. Does he have a Tala Ilan?
Yeah, he got something. It looks like a leopard.
A leopard.
Is it striped?
Has like something that hangs from a tree. Colors?
But, yeah, something that has stripes on it. But colorful stripes.
My Slipkin is working on an encyclopedia. Is this our first extinction?
A psychedelic type.
We've killed off its extinction already?
Maybe tomorrow's going to get to that. Everybody's running ahead today. But in any event, the Tala Ilan is very not kosher. And here it says it was like a Tala Ilan. No, come on. Like a Tala Ilan doesn't mean it is a Tala Ilan. It means Kemin Tala Ilan Ushieshbo Givanim Arbe. All it was trying to say is that it was very colorful, stripy like. But it's not a Tala Ilan. I mean, a Tala Ilan is Tame. Here we're talking about Torah. We're comparing it only to one element of the Tala Ilan. Oh, said Rabbi Yosef. That's why we know that Rabbi Yosef always used to quote the Targum, who read his book, and Targum, and apparently was fundamental in our Kabbalah of what the Targum is in many places. So that the Targum is traced back to Rabbi Yosef. So he says, aha, I always wondered why the Targum of Tachash, of all crazy things, should be Sazguna. I mean, what the Sazguna? But now I understand why it's called a Sazguna. Because it's Sas Bigavanim Harbe. The Targum is bringing out that this is a very colorful striped animal that takes great pride in its stripes. And therefore, it's similar to Tala Ilan, of course, fits beautifully. But anyway, we certainly don't have a Raya here that was not a kosher animal. Rava Amar, or Behemat Miyad Mitame Ve'ola Meit Miha. We can expand a little bit, given that we have other bases for Or. The only place that Or appears is not when it comes to Olim and the Mishkan. Or appears in every discussion of Tumah, where we have the Negoyim we had Beged Or, and in other cases where something is Mitzame. So here it says, the Tanya. The Brisa brings out, back in Negoyim again, where it says in the Torah, O Bishti, O Ba'erev, O Ve'or, O Bechol Malachat Or. So it could have just said, O Or. What's this O Be'or? So, Be'or is Reba, Or Be'matmeya. We have a Reboy over here that's used, interestingly, in two very different directions, but there's no way for us to determine which one would be primary, and therefore the Kalal is, if you can't define primary and secondary, to give them both equal time. And so the riboy over here is, first of all, or deimatmea, and secondly, despite the fact that it says in the pasuk, v'habeget hiyebo negat sarat v'hor'a la kohen, which is mashma that the beggar already has the negatzara. What happens if somebody brings a beggar to a kohen, shows him what he thought was a negatzara, the kohen says, no, that's not a negatzara. But as he's holding it, all of a sudden there appears a negatzara. Now, there never was a beggar with a negatzara that was uval a kohen. So is that considered to be a negatzarat? Remember that a negatzarat is a very strange thing because it's not something which it defines itself. It's something which it becomes a negatzarat only if it follows the guidelines being brought to the Kohen and the Kohen seeing it in the correct way and paskening it as a negatzarat. You cannot have a computer-defined negatzarat, despite the fact that we know that it's physically exactly the same as a negatzarat. It's not a negatzarat. So that if Chas V'Sholem, a Chatan has Tzarat. The Kohen didn't say it's Tzarat, it's not Tzarat. Which of course is one of the most clear-cut riyas that we're not talking about an illness that people were afraid of and that it was, you know, leprosy and they're going to run away and start screaming. It was a technically defined halachic issue. So that over here our question is this called Tzarat or not? So A, or be Matmeya, there you go, says Rava, that's the extra or. Forget about the Mishkan now. In which case, the question about what the Tachash is irrelevant. Because Or Be'imah Tzimeya is anyway, it's going to be Mekabel Tumah from the extra Pasuk, Bi'or. How about if you cut the Tzemer and the Pishkin and the Or, you put them all together, and you make a Sasas Gavna, and you put them, you have a really strange kind of beggar over here, V'yasah Achat Mehem Minai. How do we know that even that's called a real beggar? Talmud Lomar Old Bichol Malechet Or, which explains some of those modern sweaters you see, which if it hadn't been for this pasuk, would never have made it into the fashion world. Now, this is not the end of our limud, because at this point, says Rava, and certainly the Ikel HaMifrach, of course you could ask, that Negoyim doesn't prove anything, does it? Because Mala Negaim Sheken Shetiveir of Tameben. You can't bring a raya from the goyim to what the din is about a tumas oel, because the goyim have a tremendous chumrah of shetiva erev. So therefore, I'll have to look for another limud, will I not? It's all part of Rava's whole discussion. He's presenting this entire presentation, beginning with the goyim, going to shrotzen, and then making a ma'atzah between the two to include even oel. So therefore, he says, first, let's take a look at the goyim. We've got an extra pasuk v'or. Now I know your response, you're going to object that Negoyim can't provide a basis for Tumas Olim because it has a Chumrah that we don't find in Tumas Meis. Okay, I accept that. But let's go to the next step. Ela gamar mishratzim. Why don't we turn to Shratzim where we also have Or mentioned in the Torah and where we also have an extra pasuk, the Tanya. Or, if it said Or in the pasuk of Shratzim, then I would certainly have thought, and it does, it says Kliyetz, or Beged, or Osak, so I would have thought, or would mean Or Behemah Torah. How do I know that a sheretz that touches a leather coat that was made out of, let's say, fox skin or something, Those are what happened to foxes that sleep. Although I think he moved out of the robe already, right? It's a shame though, huh?
Yeah.
Imagine if we could have had him in the Daf Yomi today, we could have had like fox or mink. So how do we know that over there we should include even Or Be'imah Tmeyah? Talmud Lomar Or. The extra O is a Reblin. Now, I know what you're going to say. This is all part of Ra. I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, Igal HaMifrach Mala Shratzim Shekim Etam'in B'Ka'adasha. Ah, but we've already seen that Sheretz is not a proper limud to Ohel HaMeit, because Ohel HaMeit requires a Kizayin. So you're going to say, fine, when it comes to Sheretz, okay, there is Machmer on Sheretz, so it's Machmer in terms of the material as well, but who's to say that it would be Machmer for the material of a maid? I will come right around and I'll say, aha, I knew you were going to say that, but Negoyim Yochichu. Negoyim are not Matami Bika Adasha. So you'll say, but Negoyim, after all, are Matami Shisiva Erev. But Shrotzim are not. And therefore we have, basically, a Chozer HaDin. We have now a din oscillating between Negoyim and Soraz. And what we do in all such cases, of course, is we look for the common denominator. Lori Zekir Izeh. Lori Zekir Izeh. They all have different qualities, but they have one thing in common. Atzara Shavesha Behen. Sha'or Tameh Behen. Both of them are cases where the Torah defines Or as Tameh and includes a special drasha to tell me that that should expand it to include Or Be'emat Miyak, Or Be'emat Torah. Well, once we've established it for Ol Ameis, that Or is Tameh, and we have established that from the Mishkan, we can now derive from the cases of Negoyim and Shratzim that the Or in the Mishkan should also be expanded to include Or Be'emat Miyak, and as well as Arbe Matora. So Afani Avi Olame, Sha'or Tamebo, given from the Mishkan, Vidna'asebo, and therefore let us make the Arbe Matamiya, the equivalent of an Arbe Matora. Omar Le Rava Mi Barnish, Ravashi. Now Rava from Barnish asks Ravashi, it's a very nice limit on the surface, but you're overlooking one very important thing. This is another common denominator. The common denominator between Negoyim and Shrotzim is that neither of them need a Kezayit. Now one is Bekadasha, one is Bekagris, but neither of them Bekezayit. So what I could say is that the Torah is makbid on all tumas that are chal, even pachot Bekezayit, include Or Be'mat Me'ah. But when it comes to a mate, it's a very striking difference. Insists on a Kezayit. Maybe over there it's limited in materials as well, just like it's limited in the material of the tumor. So you can be for mala tzada shavesha behed, she can tmei mi pochad mi kezayit. Tomar b'mate, she inu matar me'ela b'kezayit, and therefore an olal amate would be only the or that's given in the Torah, and that or would be the or of a behima tohorah. Let's get back to our tachash issue again. Elama Rabbi Mibarnes, said Rabbi Mibarnes, I have a raya, and I say we can learn it out of a kal v'chomer from the izim, because after all, the izim, which were the ohel in the Olam Moed above the Mishkan, they were actually notzashal, not skins of izim, but notzashal izim, like cashmere. And they're not Matami Benegayim, because they're not Semer. Only Tzemer Pishtim are Matami Benegayim, as we saw. Nonetheless, they're Matami Bo'olamit, because it says Beferush that they are the Mishkan, they're called the Yod, they're the fundamental law. So therefore, is it not a Kal V'chomer that Orbe Matamiyat, which is Matami Benegayim, should certainly be Matami Bo'olamit? And that solves it. And therefore, Orbe Matamiyah is a valid Ohel Hameh to be Mekabel Tuma, and it will now require Vizala Ohel. But now, if that's the case, what was Rabbi Yosef referring to? The brisa that he was bringing. That Lo Karsha Lamalaka Or Lamalaka Chamayi Elo Orbe Ma Torah Bilvash. I mean, Bishlam if you're coming to teach me what the din of the Tachash was, then it had significant halachic ramification. But he certainly is not bringing a brisa that's only interested in telling us a historical fact. Because if he were, then he simply would have said, Taka shahaya b'mei Moshe, b'ma Torah. Period. To say it in, this is how the Ramban understands the Gemara, to say it in this fashion, this is also Merame's good, it must be coming for a horah in the way that it's played out here. That what's bothering the Rishonim is that the Gemara itself asks, so what was the Tachash in the end? Which implies that we do have an interest in its historical, what it was. Okay, identification. So therefore over here it's got to be something about the way in which Rav Yosef Breiser was phrased that bothers us.
Are we ever going to need to do repairs on the future?
No, the future is a Mikdash. So Bela Hadatani Rav Yosef. Lo shiru l'melechet shamayim elo or be'ma Torah b'vad l'ma'i hilchata. What was he coming to teach us? if we've derived that an Orbe Matzmeyah is kosher, not that we use the Orbe Matzmeyah on the Mishkan, but it's kosher, I mean, it's a time of oil. What halachic ramifications are there to Rabbi Yosef's Braita that says you can only use kosher skins for mitzvahs? Well, that's referring to tefillin. You want to write your tefillin, you got to write your tefillin on parchment that's kosher. Tefillin. It's a pasuk. Behedyaktivu lamantiyet Torah Hashem beficha min hamutar beficha. I mean, it's got a look. Again, the way Tosis explains, there's nothing wrong with the Braita telling us something that's a drushin of the pasuk. What's bothering the Gemara? But when the Braita does that, it brings a pasuk. If you're telling me this, it must be that that's a given. In other words, we know that drusha. And the Braita is coming to add now something that we wouldn't have known. The pasuk of Lamantia Torah Hashem Beficha is said about tefillin. So the pasuk is telling us, tefillin, make sure that Torah Hashem should be beficha. What do you mean beficha? Kosher. You should be able to eat what it is that you're writing on. So it can't be coming to tell me tefillin. Now, wait a minute. They can be coming to tell me the or of the, not of the parchment, the or of the batim. Where does it say beficha over there? That's not Torah Hashem. It's just housing for Torah Hashem. So maybe the housing can be from a non-kosher animal. Kamash v'lan, that the housing has to also be from a kosher animal. Asks the Gemara, but it's not true. The housing is actually Torah Hashem. Because Abaya said, the shin that's on the housing is a halakha l'moshe mi-Sinai. And that shin is part of Torah Hashem, it's part of the Shem Hashem, and therefore it anyway would have to be out of or, that is of the Behemoth Tahara. Well, maybe what Rabbi Yosef was teaching us is that the hair that's used to wrap around the little containers that hold the parshiot has to be made out of the hair of a behema tahora, and the tefira of the tefillin themselves have to be of gidin from a behema tahora. That's not Torah Hashem, and therefore I need this extra bright to explain the implications of all usages of Malachat Shemayim. Yes, but you see, Honame Allah Moshe Mi-Sinai. I mean, it says in the Braita, you need tefillin merubaot Allah Moshe Mi-Sinai. Nichrachot b'sa'aran. No, it doesn't say nichrachot b'sa'ar. Nichrachot b'sa'aran. In other words, they need to be tied with the hairs of the very animal that was used for making the rest of the tefillin. And if it's given, the rest of the tefillin need to be kosher. Then that means that these need to be kosher animals that you can eat. And this is all little from the Gidan. So that's all Halakha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, which means that the kosher is given Halakha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Again, that can't be what Rabbi Yosef is coming to teach us in this Braita.
What does it mean?
The tefillin, the parshiot and the tefillin are inserted, not raw, into the ritzua. They have to be tied around with a hair. As a matter of fact, I had a horrible maisa like that in which I gave my tefillin in for checking. I mean, I still want to strangle the guy. I gave my tefillin in for checking in Toronto. 7 years later, I come and I check them again and find out he didn't retie them. So for 7 years, it's all possible because the Meshuggah and so forth didn't tie immediately the bar. Simply unbelievable. No, the gidim is the sewing. The sar is the tying. Sewing is the thick gid on the outside of the body.
Of the whole body?
Hell. Tshuva. I obviously did something terribly wrong in trusting an idiot to check my tefillin.
Right. So they make a thread out of hair of an elephant.
Yeah. It's not a thread, it's a hair. The things you used to have when you were a kid.
And you just can go there like something.
Answer to the Gemara. Okay, we still need Rav Yosef. What do we need it for? Ritzuas. How do you know the ritzuas have to be from a kosher animal? But Rav Yitzchak says the ritzuas are also halacha l'moshe mitzina. This is ritzuot shchorot halacha l'moshe mitzina. Ah, it says shchorot. It doesn't say that they're necessarily kosher halacha l'moshe mitzina. So therefore, nihi de gemiri shchorot tohorot mi gemiri. Does it say that they have to be Torah? Therefore, we need Rabbi Yosef to tell me including the ritzuot of your tefillin, unless it's kosher. Now the obvious question over here is if the ritzuot also have the Shem Hashem written in them. If the shin on the kmatim of the tefillin, it's called Torah Hashem Beficha, and therefore it's already included in kosher. So why isn't the Dalet and the Yud also considered to be Torah Hashem Beficha?
It's not written in the knot.
And in the knot is not the same as that it should be literally written on the Torah Hashem. More like a remnant. But actually, Tosfos Shita is that only the Shin is Allah Kol Moshe Mitzina. He doesn't talk about it here, but in many places Tosfos argues with Rashi about whether the Dalet and the Yud are part of the Halakha L'Moshe Mitzina, Shin Shel Tefillin Halakha L'Moshe Mitzina. Or it means literally Shin Shel Tefillin, and the Dalet Shel Yud is not Ma'akim, it's the Halakha L'Moshe Mitzina. According to him, this is another indication that that's the case. We have to get into the distinction you just made. Anyway, but now that you've told me about this Takash, you know, I'm really curious now. So, my hobby, Allah, the Takash, Ayah B'mei Moshe, you adroitly got out of the dealing with that issue by bringing me, you know, other riyas, but I'm still curious. And so, what was the Takash? It's really strange because generally the Gemara doesn't follow curiosity. It says, my dahave have. I mean, who cares?
We have a picture of the Takash.
Ah, there you go. We have a picture so we can easily determine what it
is. Is this Rabbi Scrolls? Or is this
what does it look like?
A fish. It looks like a fish bird. It's your neck.
Dugong, dugong.
This clearly, I mean, look at that picture and tell me that doesn't remind you of something.
I wasn't there.
Nelly, this is the marker of the Loch Ness Monster. Take a look. It's very, very clear. So we all need to know.
No, well.
No wonder. We now know where it was hidden. It says it was Nignaz. It was clearly Nignaz in Loch Ness. They call it a mace. Everything suddenly fits.
That's probably why.
As Rabbi Yosef would have said, I do.
That's probably why I have a piper up above the parking lot blowing, you know, hoping to charge the
air. It all comes together. Well, very nice. Okay. So, what do we say about
it's
this?
A sea mammal.
Let's see. Omer Rabbi Elah, Omer Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish. Omer Haya Rabbi Meir, Takash Haya B'mei Moshe. Rabbi Meir said that the Takash was a specially engineered animal. Birya B'fnei Atzmai, Haya. Lo Yichriu B'chachamim Imin Chayari Imin Be'imahu. And they were unable to determine whether it was called a chayo or a behema. Keren achat haitalo b'mitzcho. It had a single horn in its forehead. Ulofi sha'an izdamin ala Moshe, v'yasamim ala mishkan, v'nignaz. It appeared to Moshe only at that time. He used it to make the mishkan and was never seen again.
The real story of the unicorn.
That's called a narwhal.
Narwhal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if it only had... can you imagine a non-kosher unicorn? That's ridiculous. The most tohar of all animals. What? The sweetest and most beautiful. Must be tohar. The Omar Reb Yehuda. You didn't look closely. V'yomer Reb Yehuda Shor Sheikriv Adam HaRishon Keren Atap Beitavo B'mitzchot. The original carbon of the world was a unicorn. Shenemar V'tetev L'Hashem Mishor Par Makrin Mafris. Makrin means double horn. Ah, Amr Nachva Yitzchak, you don't look closely there either. Makrin K'tiv. Why do you think the Torah leaves out the Yud? You know, it's red Makrin, but it's written Makrin as if it only had one Karen. And that's the remez. So that proves that it was a kosher animal.
When did Adam bring a korban?
Adam HaRishon. The first thing that he did. You think everything is written in the Bible?
I thought Noah was the first one to shech the behemoth.
That's for eating. Noah was the first one to eat. Omer of Nachum by Yitzchak Makrin. Relief should be made between behemoth. So then that must mean that it must be a behemoth, no? I mean, if it's used for a carbon, Chai is not kosher for a carbon. I mean, certainly Adam HaRishon knew his halachas, didn't he? But Kima, as a matter of fact, he was the one who made behemoths in the first place, so who would know better than him? But Kima de'ika keresh, to mean chayahu, v'let le'el achot ha'keren, yikalameh, mean chayahu. There is another animal that only has a unicorn, and that is the keresh. The keresh is a type of chaya. So how do we know whether the Tachash was a type of unicorn that was a behemoth unicorn as used by Adam, or whether it was a Chaya unicorn, which is not kosher for behemoth, for Korbanos? And that was the suffix that the Chachomim had as to whether its Chalev is kosher, whether you need Kisui Adam on the Tachash. It's not so kosher, not like a Koy. A Koy where we have an Emmet, no. And a koi where we have an emes suffix, or whether it's a mixture. I mean, the Rishon go out of the way.
We just don't know what it is.
No, yeah, go. But even those who hold that it's a mixture, say Viri of Bishnaot should not be confused with the sugi of androgynous or of koi. It means that Bria Ketikuna Haita, not some odd mutation or kalayim or so on. Getting back to our Ner Shabbat. Tilata beget shekibla v'lo hivava, Rabbi Eliezer omer to ben ahi ve'in madlikim ba. If you have a small piece of beget, so now you've got your 3x3 etzbaot, the smallest size of a beget, be mekabel tumah, you take this and you twist it to turn it into a tila, but you don't singe it. Rabbi Eliezer says, well, if that's the case, it remains tamei, which is Bekabel Tumah. And furthermore, you can't use it as a Ner on Shabbos, which is rather strange. What in the world have to do with anything? Rabbi Akiva Ner Torah, you know, it's Torah. Apparently, you've taken away its din of Tumah by taking it and twisting it. Umad Likinba. Says the Gemara, now, Bishlem Elinim Tumah, it's rather obvious what the Machlokas is in terms of whether it's Bekabel Tumah or not, but hopefully, the Rabbi Eliezer Sabah, Rabbi Eliezer holds that once you do kippul, you haven't changed anything. I mean, it's like folding a beggar. So kippul eno mo'il. Kippul doesn't help to take off the shame of beggar to turn it into a ptila. It's reversible. And therefore, benilta kamaita kami, it remains a beggar as it was, and just as 3x3 etzvot is mekabel tumah before kippul, 3x3 etzvot is mekabel tumah after kippul. Rabbi Akiva savar, Rabbi Akiva says, Lord, the kippul basically is an act that shows your machshava not to use this as a beged any longer. You've turned it into a ptila, and therefore, even though it hasn't made a permanent physical change, it is considered to be a maisa, to be mavato, the shame of the beged, and it turns it into a ptila. And therefore, kippul mo'il, uvatulei batil, you have now been mavatalit and turned it into a wick. But what is the machlokas when it comes to hadlaka? I mean, certainly, Tuma the Tyra has nothing to do with hadlaka, does it? But despite the fact that the entire parrot keeps bringing up some kind of strange connection of Tuma the Tyra and hadlaka, but I mean, clearly that's coincidental. There couldn't be any connection between the two. So what would the machlokas be when it comes to hadlaka? This is going to test our creative skills, because we're going to have to figure out what kippul and hivuv would have to do with hadlaka or saner. Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Osha, V'chein Amar Rav Ada Bar Ava. I'll tell you what's happening over here. You've got to imagine a case in which we have particularly exact Beged. In other words, we've got 3x3 etzba'ot mitzumtzamot. If it's missing anything, kaput. It's no longer a Beged. And furthermore, we have to imagine for the second time in our parak that it's not only Erev Shabbos, it's also a Yunt. So what's our problem? Now that we've created the setting,
why does it have to be exactly?
Why
can't it be a little bit more twisted?
Well, beyond of Zechar Liyot Erev Shabbat Askina. Now let me give you the halachic assumptions over here. Okay, assumption number one: the Kulei Alma Itlo de Rabbi Yehuda. We have to say over here that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva hold of Rabbi Yehuda's din. The Amar Mesikin BeKelim VeIn Mesikin BeShivrei Kelim. Once again, we are reminded that a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, about Mukta, which also has to do with Nolad, something that wasn't there before, which is there now. And Rabbi Yehuda, again, is Machber, and that's Sugya Nolad. You've got something that was usable before Shabbat, and now it breaks. So you've got a broken dish. That broken dish is no longer what it was. Comes Moksha because it's like no life. And therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, well, if it's Yontif, don't think you could put that broken dish into your oven. Of course, the dish was made out of wood, so it's flammable. You can't put it into your oven to cook with, because then you're moving Moksha. You're using Moksha. You can't use Moksha. So that's the first assumption in terms of halacha. So far we've got three assumptions. It's exactly 3x3. It's talking about an Erev Shabbos, which is also a Yom Tov. We're all agreed that Rabbi Yehuda is right, and that if it's broken, you can't use it. Furthermore, our fourth assumption, second halachic assumption, is the Kulei Alma Itlo de Ula. Everybody furthermore agrees with Ula. Ula holding the Amar Ula. Hamadlik Tzarich Shiadlik Berov Hayotze. When you light it, you can't simply light it for a moment and now have it go up. You've got to keep that fire on it until most of the exposed wick is aflame. This is similar to the Baha'alotcha et Hanerot. And therefore, what happens over here in our sugya, I'll tell you very simply, okay? Let's go back to the machlokas of Tuma, and now you're going to see how they are amazingly interrelated. And watch me pull a wick out of my hat. Rabbi Eliezer Savar Kipul Eino Mo'il. Now, what did Rabbi Eliezer hold? That turning it, Erev Shabbos, into a wick by rolling it, that didn't change anything. So what have you got? A kli, because a beged is a kli. Okay, you come over to it, and you start lighting it. Ah, but you weren't Yotze yet, because you only started, according to Ula. You have to let it burn a little bit first. Aha! But by the time it's burning a little bit, it's Shivrei Kelim. And you're only going to be lighting once it's already Shivrei Kelim. But we all agree, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can't light with Shivrei Kelim. Therefore, QED, Rabbi Eliezer holds, you can't light with it on Shabbos for the very same reason that he holds it can't be changed from Kabbalah's Tumah. Brilliant.
Exactly the same reason.
It was still a beged. Well, right, it's Makabal Tumah. But if that's the case, if it becomes a Shivrei beged, not Shivrei Kelim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, can't light with it. So since the first moment of my lighting is basically only a hechsher to be able to get most of it lit, by the time I'm doing my most of it lit, I'm now using Shivrei Kelim. But Rabbi Yehuda, you can't use Shivrei Kelim. Therefore, ain madlikin, you're not allowed to use it. Given a few minor adjustments in the situation. Whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, as soon as you crumpled it on Erev Shabbos and rolled it up, it was no longer a beged. And therefore, it was Shivrei Kelim at the beginning, and it was set aside for using it as a fuel. That's perfectly kosher. It's not Nolad. And therefore, it's kosher on Yontif, because it was so defined before, but certainly not Muktzah. v'chikav madlik, and therefore when he's being madlik, a piece of firewood for all intents and purposes. V'yetz b'yamakav madlik. And again says Rav Yosef, oh my God, that's wonderful. I was wondering about another thing besides the happy colors. And the other thing I was wondering about is why did I have a braita that kept stressing a case of three, precisely three. Because many of the, remember, they're called sofrim because they used to arrange things by numbers, according to many shittas. So, you know, so the one of the things that he arranged by numbers was shalosh b'shalosh mitzumtzumot. Exactly three. What do you mean exactly three? The bigger it gets, the more it's matame. So where would I have halakha, which I need exactly three? And more than three isn't good. And this has been driving me crazy for years. Now you're telling me the only way to understand this Mishnah is you figured out on your own, is we've got to be talking about shalosh shalosh mitzumtzumot. You're a genius. I love you. So I know the Tanina shalosh shalosh mitzumtzumot v'lo yadam ala mayelkut. I could never figure out what that was referring to. Of course, it's referring to this Mishnah. Now, midikamatarit survada barava libid Rabbi Yehuda. Wait. You mean Ravada Barava explains this Mishnah that it's a double portion that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva agree to Rabbi Yehuda's din that the nolad would be asur. If it's shivrei kelim, you can't use it on yontif. I mean, that's certainly in the mashmaut is when somebody does that, is that Shema Minak Rabbi Yehuda Svirale. He himself personally would agree that shivrei kelim are not usable, but is that true? Umi Omer Ravada Barava, he did Ravada Barava and beat Paskamak Rabbi Yehuda. The Omer Ravada Barava, nochri. You have a piece of wood that's useless. Comes along a guy on Yontif, and he carves out a container in this simple block. A bakat is a block of wood. And now you've got yourself a serving bowl. So he was playing, okay, fine, you know, he's got a hobby. Yisrael is allowed to use it on Yontif. Why? Before it was firewood, now it's a kli. There was nolad on yontif, it should be mukta. If you pass on like Rabbi Yehuda, you shouldn't be able to use it in your oven. By the way, why can you use cooking? Why can you use it in your oven? It's baltashis. The answer is that clearly it's talking about a case where it's around the world in 80 days, and either you throw this in, or you lose everything. Or you may have no other fuel. And then, of course, there's no Israel Baltashkas. So but it's interesting to speak about it. What do you mean, Mesika? How can you do this on Yontif?
You just said you're using it as a kli and not as fuel.
No, nope, you're using fuel. It as fuel, I said. But you should have assumed that if you heard you're using it as a kli, what I said was you're using it as fuel.
I
understand, so just click it in. So answers the Gemara, you're absolutely right, that's what he's saying. When he said over here that both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva agree that Rabbi Yehuda is right and that Ein Mesik Meshivrei Kelim doesn't mean he agrees, it's a divrei de Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva Tomerle. V'lei lo svirle, he personally, Rabbi Barav, did not paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. He's just saying that this Mishnah was clearly going, l'shitat Rabbi Yehuda, both Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer and Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. I must say, I have this urge to get to the two dots. Is it okay? I mean, we're almost there. We're almost there. Now, Rava has a different explanation. Rava says, well, this is very imaginative, very creative, and it's lovely. But, you know, there's a very simple explanation. The simple explanation does not attempt to seek elegance where no elegance may be present. Because, after all, elegance is achieved in elegant words. But elegance is not achieved in these complicated four assumptions to create a Mishnah that is elegant and having both issues revolve around the same thing. In other words, you're getting an elegant explanation, but in very inelegant ways. I disagree with this, by the way, comes up all the time again in scientific theory.
Elegance by simplicity.
You can get elegance in terms of simplicity, which all things are interrelated. But when you come up with something as strange as string theory, for instance, you have to get there in inelegant ways to get elegant solutions, and then there's a suspicion that you're being overly imaginative, we know that Rava always is against imaginative solutions. He always says, that's lovely, but it ain't what it says. And this is exactly, this is a very simple explanation over here. If you're ready to accept that the Mishnah is not talking about the same thing, and that the relationship of Tuma to the Hadlok over here, and the Machlok of Eliezer and Akiva is entirely coincidental, then we have a simple explanation. The explanation is that according to Eliezer, you can't use a wick that hasn't been properly singed before Shabbat, because it doesn't burn properly. It's very simple. Forget about Yontif and 3x3s and Rabbi Yehudas and Ulas. It's not doing anything. They don't burn well, and that's part of our whole din over here. Bamem Adlikin, you have to light something which burns well. Hey, but wait a minute. But Rabbi Yosef was so happy. He finally figured out what his 3x3 bits and samos are, and you're going to take it away from him? There obviously was somewhere where 3x3 bits and samos was important, which was a riot that what appeared inelegant must have been true. So what are you going to do with Rabbi Yosef, shalosh shalosh bits and samos? Lamai Yilchus, how do you understand it then, Rabbah? Yeah, that's the inyan tuma. The question is, remember, that the reason that shalosh b'shalosh 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 b'chlal is megabel tumah, even though it's not truly a bag, it is why? Because if you're poor, you'll use it for a patch. But if you use it for a patch, some of the patch is going to disappear in the melah, in the area which is the seam. You can't make a patch. Does the patch have to be 3x3? Or does the piece to make the patch have to be 3x3? It is on this issue that we will stand or fall. And that exactly is what Shalosh Shalosh Mitzum Tzumo was referring to. It's not. Shalosh HaShalosh Amru Chutz Min HaMelo Divir Rabbi Shimon. You can't include in the shear of the Shalosh HaShalosh the little seam that you make by bending it over and sewing it. You know, you make a, what do they call those? Quilts. Patch quilts. Yeah, you bend it over and you make it. You make a tiny little seam and you sew. So that part isn't included now in the blanket. That's bent over. Therefore, I say you have to exclude that. You need 3x3 after that. The Chachamim Onim, Shalosh, Shalosh. Get this, Rabbi Yosef. Mechuvanot. Which is, sounds to me awfully like Mitzum Tzomot. And that's where your Shalosh, Shalosh, Mitzum Tzomot was talking about. It wasn't saying, but more not. It was saying, what is the share of 3x3? Mitzum Tzom, even Mitzum Tzom,
even without the
mellow, even not taking into consideration that you're going to lose some to the mellow. What actually is the size of a regular patch in a patched quilt?
Patch quilt is just to have a quilt. Patch to actually fix.
But what about a patch quilt? I'm interested to know what's the shear of a patch. Whose wives does patch quilting
here? I have a mother-in-law.
Probably about 6 inches.
No way. Oh, that's a cheap modern imitation of a patch.
No, they're not small.
6 inches.
Yeah, patch quilts are pretty big.
Eve does it. But Eve's not here.
That is not here either. I have one in my house also.
Let's see, 6 inches. And we're talking about Shalosh, Shalosh, I suppose. Shalosh.
No, 6 centimeters.
6 inches is way
too
small.
Smaller than that. Yeah.
It's not as big as this whole thing.
Well, here's where we could finally see whether the Chazanish is right or wrong. Let's see the size of the patch. Thank you.